So we have Michael Abelman here, who's down from Salt Spring Island. He's a farmer and an author and has a lot of actually beautiful calendars and books out there. He's a photographer. And he's been doing the organic farming work since the 1970s and is considered a real pioneer. So we're fortunate to have him here with us. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you so much. Can you hear me? Yeah. Well, I'm going to jump right in and take quite a different twist from where we've been. This is the downtown Eastside neighborhood in Vancouver, British Columbia, known as the Low Track. It's the ground zero home of the term Skid Row. Poorest postal code in the country, highest concentration of intravenous drug use, open prostitution, and drug overdoses anywhere in North America. Now, all of this exists in the heart, and sorry, you can advance. I have to signal here, thank you. All of this exists, and then go to the next one, yeah. In the heart of the gleaming steel and glass high-rises, pristine parks, art galleries, and restaurants, and the shiny new Mercedes-Benzes, Lexuses, BMWs that ply the streets of what is now considered to be North America's and maybe the world's most expensive city. But as Vancouver's prosperity is celebrated, its concentration of poverty and raw desperation endures in the midst of the polished and the preened. And if you walk or drive down the streets or back alleys of this neighborhood, you'll likely see someone pirouetting in the middle of the street, high on crack, or someone else sprawled on the sidewalk with a needle in their arm. Bear witness to these things, and it is difficult to not make judgments. We all have our deep-seated prejudices. We look the other way, walk a little faster, close the car window. But what we cannot ignore is that there is a thin line that separates any of us from that life on the streets. A divorce, death of a family member, childhood trauma, financial crisis, illness, any of these things can push us over the edge. The amputee in a wheelchair, the woman soliciting Johns on the corner of the street, the junkie sprawled on the sidewalk, each has a heart and a soul and the desire to do something meaningful in the world. How could we offer that opportunity? Well, 8 years ago, we started on a half-acre parking lot next to a dive hotel with a bunch of wooden boxes full of soil and a ragtag crew of 11 people from this neighborhood. There was no big idea or grand philosophy, no bleeding heart attempt to save anyone, just the simple idea that planting seeds and growing food, providing a reason to get out of bed, might allow other things to happen as well. We took abandoned and abused land and employed abandoned and abused people. We did what had never been done on this scale before, and we did it with folks that no one ever imagined could accomplish anything. If I didn't have this job, where would I be? Dead? In an alley shooting up? Or in a penitentiary? Now that's straight talk from our coworker Lyle, who is not prone towards dramatic or romantic reflections on a life that has included robbing banks, providing collection services for drug dealers, and surviving a jump off the top of an 18-story building. The job that Lyle is referring to is farming. Now, not the kind of farming you might think if you close your eyes and think farm. No cows grazing in vast green pastures, no welcoming farmhouse or tractors cultivating. These farms are on parking lots, under bridges, on abandoned urban lots. Now, I've spent 43 years growing organic food commercially. And along the way, I had a sobering revelation. The majority of high-quality food I was producing was going to a very narrow segment of the society, those who could afford it. But isn't good food the birthright for everyone? We all have to eat, and we all have to eat well, but equally important, we all need something meaningful to do in our lives. So after growing food for the privileged, I felt like it was time to work with those who were not. And not by giving them food, but by giving them the skills and the space to grow it. In the mid-1980s, I started what I called the Center for Urban Agriculture. Now, you have to understand, in the mid-1980s, when you use the words urban and agriculture in the same sentence, you were considered to be a little strange. Supermarkets at that time had pulled out of many low-income neighborhoods. Those same neighborhoods had numerous abandoned lots and throngs of people without work. I had, what I thought at the time was a big idea. What if we could convert those abandoned lots into farms to grow jobs and production quantities of food? I started here. Is it working? Oh, yeah. These are old slides. 103rd and Grape, former home of the Watts Health Clinic. How many people know the community of Watts in Los Angeles? Burned down during the uprisings in 1965. Another neighborhood that is renowned for its incredible poverty. We removed thousands of pounds of trash and rubble and hauled in our tractors from an hour and a half north from the farm where I was operating and employed local youth to help us plant. Go ahead. I love that image. A noble idea. But if you haven't noticed, my skin is not black or brown, and I'm not from that neighborhood. So while that project was a great success agriculturally and has had an influence to this day, I had to accept what a dangerous thing it is to think you know what other people need. And I also had to dig deep and ask myself what it really means to help, and how do we do it well? Now, 30 years later and 1,200 miles north, with a little more life experience, we're farming on parking lots and large plastic containers bursting with salad greens, arugula, spinach, peas, melons, tomatoes, and more. And I'm just going to show you really quickly a series of slides. These are pretty substantial scaled farms in the city. Go ahead. And we're going to just zoom through them. Forgive me, that's CAM. These are our tunnel houses, 16,000 square feet of high tunnel houses. This is 2 months after putting these things up. Strawberries and, we'll just keep going through. Yep. Can you see these? This is the before of an orchard that we have. There are 800 trees, including a whole range of, this is what it looked like when we started. This is a daily job, buckets of these. This is me planting the first tree. This is 2 years later. Now the trees have eight and 10 inch diameter trunks. They're 20 feet tall. Shiro plums, persimmons in British Columbia. And the orchard from the air. Yep. Nova. Yep. Mike Devine, Alan. Yep. Sorry about this. We're going to zoom through them. Yep. And the scale. Donna, Kenny, Miranda, Jesus, Kenny again, and Lyle. Okay. And yeah. Now we call this. Thank you. Thank you very much. We call this Soul Food Street Farms. Our work is about recovery. One handful of seeds, one bucket of compost, one parking lot at a time. 8 years, 75 people employed over those years, several millions of dollars in wages paid, 4+ acres of pavement, thousands of growing boxes, a large urban orchard, which you saw, 25 tons of food produced annually. And for every dollar we pay our staff, an estimated $2.25 savings to the healthcare, legal, and social assistance systems. Now, our staff come together each day in one of four different farm sites that are either parking lots or former contaminated brownfields. They spend their days growing food for the community. This is not some sort of make-work volunteer program. These are paid jobs on production farms supplying Vancouver with excellent quality food. Our program includes not just agricultural training, but life skills as well, things like canning and cooking, basic financial literacy, and more. We have a breakfast program. Teach people how to drive, provide rain gear when necessary, take them to the hospital, or pick them up from jail. Now, we are not social workers. We're not addiction experts or mental health professionals. We are farmers who recognize that the simple act of planting seeds, nurturing plants, harvesting food, and feeding a neighborhood can heal individuals in the world. And we have seen in the people we work with that the simplest of solutions can have the most profound impacts. Reflecting on her journey, Donna, who worked with us for the first 4 years of the project, said, "What's the use of being sober if you don't do anything with your sobriety?" And Alan, who went from hardcore crack addict to farm supervisor, he did this while raising two stepkids, both with fetal alcohol syndrome. And I used to tell Alan how much I couldn't believe and respected his resiliency and what he had achieved, and he never believed me or acknowledged what I was telling him. Self-respect is certainly not a trait that is common in this neighborhood. And Kenny, our first neighborhood farmer, told me that he comes to work on the farms feeling miserable and leaves feeling relief and hope. And I'll never forget planting tomatoes with Kenny our first season, when everything was new and a tomato plant was not just one more tomato plant, but something to behold. And I don't think he noticed, but I watched Kenny just looking at one of those plants, in awe of its fragile nature. And I sensed in that moment that he realized that plant was dependent on him for its survival. And when the first red tomatoes ripened on those plants, all of us came together to sample our work. And I got to watch that crew's expressions as their brains registered something truly amazing, something so new and so real and so beautiful. Working this way, delighting in the world we share, is eye-opening, and still with eyes wide open on the world, the pain, the poverty, the pull of drugs, it is impossible to not feel the suffering that is likewise common to us all. We all get our share. But how do we respond to the suffering of others? We need to start by recognizing the difference between compassion and pity, and I'm not sure the latter has ever provided much relief. Compassion can be as simple as providing living soil for people to put their hands in, the training to do good work, and a sense of purpose and belonging. Compassion is transforming forbidding urban hardscapes into living, breathing, biologically dynamic places that not only nourish our bodies, but open our hearts. Nova, a former meth addict and street kid, refers to her soul food tribe as her farmily. Love it. Farmily implies community in all of its manifestations. Nova tells me she bristles when someone refers to one of the farms as a gardener, our staff as gardeners. It's a sentiment I would never have imagined from these people that I work with, but I certainly resonate with it. You know, if you've been out there in the middle of acres of food digging beds or transplanting, or it's a harvest day and there's a truckload to be harvested, you don't exactly think of yourself as a gardener. But to have that recognition, that distinct identity, to think of your work of planting seeds and making lots of food as a profession, not a hobby, and to know that your hands are growing for 100 times your own self is deeply satisfying, especially for the folks we work with. We, as farmers who represent only 1.5% of the population, are like a bridge to another world. And the crowds that converge several times a week at the farmers' markets are seeking something more than fresh food. They want the stories. Why the berries are small this week, but so incredibly intense in flavor. How we can possibly grow such good food using biology instead of chemistry. They linger and taste and watch us as we work, strong and sure with dirty, rough hands and funky clothes and ruddy complexions. They watch us as we jive and joke and share recipes and tales from the land. And I realize that there is a deeper soulful nourishment that our society is desperately longing for, a hunger that cannot be satisfied by simple calories alone. This nourishment cannot be obtained from food that travels an average 1,300 miles from the field to the plate. It can't be absorbed from a package or from the shelves of a supermarket or from anonymous ingredients floating out of context. It cannot be enhanced or manufactured or engineered. Even the most complex preparations, the most sublime sauces, cannot bring to life what is not already there. The kind of nourishment I'm describing is based on relationships, local, biological, interpersonal, ecological. It is the result of understanding connections, knowing the person who grew the food, knowing that they were paid a living wage, knowing that the land has been well cared for and protected from development, knowing that the food has not been assaulted with an array of chemistry and that its genetic makeup hasn't been messed with. But most importantly, knowing that everyone has a place at the table, equal access to real food, and the opportunity to do something meaningful in their lives. Now, I have to be honest, it's a little weird that I'm the one that's standing up here today telling you this story. You know, I've always had good food to eat. a roof over my head, loving relationships, beautiful children. I have no idea what it's like to be living in poverty or strung out on opiates or abused as a child. So the real heroes of this story are those not very far from where we comfortably sit today, who are wrestling with demons and challenges that many of us could never endure. So in the midst, and I am ending here, in the midst of all the ain't it awful hand-wringing going on these days, let's try to remember that for every global crisis, for every disaster, for every mean-spirited, narcissistic world leader, for every act of terror or sign of climate collapse, there are a million stories of hope and possibility. Soul Food Street Farms is just one of them. Create those hopeful stories. Seek them out. Participate in them. There is so much magic in the world. I experience it every time I witness the miracle of a seed germinating, or on early morning walks when I linger long enough to receive small fleeting gifts, like drops of dew on taut, squeaky cabbages reflecting the light of the world. Or when I remember members of our staff at Soul Food Street Farms like Alan or Nova, who came to us in the grips of gnawing addiction, but are now thriving and highly skilled, productive farmers. We may feel paralyzed when faced with the enormity of our modern dilemma, but we have enormous power in and around the places where we live. So come back home, nurture and nourish every living thing you encounter, and reimagine, replant, and re-inspire your world, one seed, one farm, one meal, one individual at a time. Thank you so much. Thank you.